Hello, everybody. This week's parasha is Parashas Vayakel. And at the end of last week's parasha, Parashas Kisisa, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from the mountain, and he has a certain radiance. He has what's known as the Karnei Hahoid, these rays of light that shone forth from him. And the Medrash tells us that the way Moshe Rabbeinu was merited to have these rays of light is because when Moshe Rabbeinu was writing the Torah, he would write and write and write and write, and eventually he finished writing the Torah. And says the Medrash, there was a little bit of ink left over in his quill, and he took that ink and he put it upon himself, and that's how the Karnei Hahoid came about. Now, what in the world does the Medrash mean? So different commentaries explain the Medrash differently. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says this extra ink that the Medrash is referring to is a specific letter that was left out of the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu is told by Hashem later on to write that Moshe Rabbeinu is Anav Mikol Adam. He's the greatest and most humble person that there is. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't write that. Hashem, please don't make me write that. I don't want to write about myself that I'm so humble. So Hashem says, okay, you know what? Write it, but write it shorter. Leave out the yud that's usually found in the word Anav. Usually Anav is spelled Ayin Nun Yud Vav. So this time write it just Ayin Nun Vav. So that extra ink, says Aruch Chaim HaKadosh, the extra ink that was supposed to be the full expression of Moshe Rabbeinu's greatness in his anivus was actually saved. It was extra. And that, metaphorically, Moshe Rabbeinu put upon himself means Moshe Rabbeinu internalized in himself such a level of humbleness that it allowed the inner radiance of his neshama to shine forth. When a person completely pulls himself out of being only self-interested about taking care of his own interests and being self-obsessed, when a person allows himself to be completely there for a bigger thing, to be there for others, to be there for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when a person gets to that level, there's no more blockage. Nothing stops the radiance that's in his neshama of shining forth. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu got these Karnei Hahoid. Now the Baal Turim tells us that every Jew on Shabbos could reach such a level and have Karnei Hahoid. And that's why, says the Baal Turim, our Parashas Vayakel begins with the mitzvah of Shabbos. Moshe Rabbeinu got Karnei Hahoid from his anivus. A Jew can get those same Karnei Hahoid on Shabbos. And the Ruach HaYahu explains, because on Shabbos, a person, he stops his day-to-day pursuits, his, you know, just trying to make a buck, trying to take care of himself. And a person on Shabbos stops, and he connects to something bigger. Shabbos is a day that we celebrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the world in 6 days. On the seventh day, he rested. He had a bigger purpose. Shabbos was known as Me'ein Olam Haba. It represents the world to come. It represents the final purpose of the creation. And Shabbos is something bigger. A Jew, yes, he eats on Shabbos. Yes, he rests on Shabbos. But it's supposed to allow him to free himself up from his grind that goes on during the week and to stop and think bigger, connect to something bigger. And when a Jew does that, his neshama irradiates out of him because there's nothing blocking it anymore. He's not small, petty, and, you know, covered in mud. He's bigger now. He's part of something bigger. He's connected to something bigger. The Chafetz Chaim used to say that Shabbos is called an ois. It's called a sign. He said, I'll give you a mashal. You know, you go to some stores and the lights are off and no one behind the counter. You can't see anything going on. So you figure that the store is out of business. It must have closed down. Who knows what happened. But if there's a sign on the door that says, sorry, I'll be back in 10 minutes, or close for repairs, you know that there's still something going on. There's just this temporary, there's something going on over here. Shabbos is a sign that although the whole week we're not as busy with spirituality as we should be, although the whole week we're busy just trying to take care of ourselves and making it through the day, but Shabbos is that sign that the store is still in business. You're right, right now it's under repairs. Right now it doesn't look as good as it should be, but there's still stuff going on. We're still working towards something bigger. Shabbos is our chance to reconnect, to bring ourselves to a bit of a better place, a higher place, and to look and to try to build up ourselves for the coming week. The parsha itself begins with the words by Yakel that Moshe Rabbeinu gathered everybody in together. And the question is, why specifically here did Moshe Rabbeinu gather them in? So some of Farshim say that Moshe Rabbeinu is showing Klai Yisrael the importance of the mitzvah of Shabbos, that Shabbos is something that's so important, everyone has to come and hear about this. But Yakel Moshe, he gathered them all in. But the Emes Yaakov says a very interesting shot. He says that we know that one of the prerequisites, one of the most fundamental things that was needed before the Jewish people can get the Torah was Vayichan Sham Yisrael Keneged Ahar. Klal Yisrael rested by the mountain. Ish Echad B'Lev Echad says the Midrash, Klal Yisrael was like one man. It was like one unit. It was completely Ba'achdus. And that was essential for Kabbalah's Torah because no Jew alone could take upon himself a Torah. Torah is too big. Torah can be taken upon by Klal Yisrael as a whole. Each person kind of fills in the gap that the other person can fill. So, says that Mithyaka, what happened was, by the Chet HaEgel, when everyone started going after their own personal Yetzirah, there was a huge period, there was a huge separation, to the point where the Yerushalmi says that there wasn't only one Egel. By the time everything was finished, each Shevet made their own Egel. No one could get along, everybody made their own Avodah Zarah, everyone served it their own way, and Klal Yisrael, after the sin of the Chet HaEgel, was shattered a little bit. It was kind of fragmented into little pieces. So the first thing that Moshe Rabbeinu had to do before the completion of the Mishkan was Vayakel Moshe. Moshe had to gather everyone back together. He had to make a achdus back in Klal Yisrael to make one so that they could properly accept the Torah, so to speak, again, and the Mishkan in the Zik Parsha. After the Parsha talks about the mitzvah of Shabbos, the Parsha then goes on to talk about the different halachas of the building of the Mishkan. And Rashi brings down the famous Medrash that the Gemara learns from here that the reason why the Torah first put Shabbos and then the Mishkan was to teach us the halacha that although and as amazing and as important and as great as the building of the Mishkan is, it does not override Shabbos. When Shabbos came, they would stop the building and then they'd continue the next day. But the big building of the Mishkan is not Deicha Shabbos. And the base Kelm, the author of Kelm, points out, he says that the reason why Hashem commanded it to be this way was to show us something very important. If you think about it, what was the Mishkan? The Mishkan was Hashem's home, so to speak. Imagine a palace of a king to a certain extent. Shabbos is a day of rest of the people. Yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to know something. He wants us to recognize that he needs no place to live. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fine. He has a Mishkan for us. He has Shabbos for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, don't build my Mishkan on Shabbos. I want you to have Shabbos. I want you to grow spiritually. And the best thing for you is Shabbos. And put my Mishkan on hold because I want everything to be for you. And that's the level of love that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has for Klal Yisrael. And that's how much he wants what's best for us. That I don't need my Mishkan. Stop it. Rest on Shabbos. Grow on Shabbos. Because everything ultimately is for you to grow and for you to become better. In Perek Lamed Hey, Pasuk Hey, the Pasuk says, Kichu me'itchem, take from yourselves a truma for Hashem. And the Aznayim Atayr of Zaman Tzoroskin asks, shouldn't it say you should give titnu? Why does it say kichu? Why does it say take? And the truth is you find the same language back in Parshas Truma. A few weeks ago it says, v'yikhu li truma. And he should take from me a truma. Now, there you could say it's talking about the people who were in charge of the collection. But here it's saying, Kru me'itchem, take from yourselves. What's this language of taking? Give. So he explains it a story. There's a well-known story. There's once a very, very wealthy man known as the Gvir Zaldovich. That was his name, apparently. I think he believed he lived in Minsk. And Reb Chaim Volozhiner, I believe it was Reb Chaim Volozhiner, maybe perhaps Reb Chaim Brisker, could be confused. He needed to raise money for the yeshiva. So he came to Minsk to stay by this person's house, a very, 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 you know, famous philanthropist. And he told him, you know, I'm here to raise money for my yeshiva. So he tells him, look, Rabbi, how much money do you need to raise for yeshiva? So he told him, I think around whatever it was, 100 ruble, let's say, more, 200 ruble, I don't know. A significant number. He said, okay, look, you know, you sit here and learn in my house. I have a big library. You learn. And I'll see what I can do for you. Let me see if I can call some people. Let me see if I can raise the money for you. This way you can just sit and learn and not be busy running around. Fine. So the rabbi sits in the study. One day goes by. 2 days go by. 3 days goes by. He says, "Nu, how's it going?" So the philanthropist tells him, he says, you know, we're doing great. I have half the money already. Okay. Couple of the more days go by, says, "New, how's it going?" He's like, "We're almost there. We got 3/4 of the money. We're still working." He's like, "Amazing! Thank you so much." He went back to go learn. Finally, a week and a half goes by. He comes in and says, Rabbi, we have all the money. Wow, thank you so much. It's so kind of you to do this. You should have so many schusim, brachas, etc. And Reb Chaim goes back to his yeshiva. A few weeks later, there's a din Torah called, what happened? The partner of this philanthropist is bringing the din Torah to Reb Chaim. What happened? Turns out that this partner and this Gvir Zaldovich, they have a partnership. They split everything 50-50. So he said, you, my friend Zaldovich, you gave all this money to this yeshiva, and you didn't tell me about it. We're partners. We just split everything 50-50. I wanted to give half as well. You don't have a right to go give all the money yourself. So that was the entire being brought to Reb Chaim. So Chaim was very surprised. He said, before we started the entire, Mr. Zaldovich, why in the world did you, if you gave all the money yourself, why'd you make me wait for a week and a half in your house to raise the money? You're giving it out of your own pocket. What took so long? What was going on? So he looked at Reb Chaim and he said a very, very important thing. He says, Rabbi, you know, it's not that easy and it doesn't go that quick to fight the Yetzer Hara. When you came, I decided I'm going to try. And I went and I learned Musar and I pushed myself and I told myself about what's important in life and what really counts. And I managed to put aside some of the money and said, here, this is for the yeshiva. And then over the week and then a week and a half, slowly but surely, I was able to take from myself and put to tzedakah all the money you needed for yeshiva. And it takes time. It takes time to work on yourself. Says Reb Zalman Sarotskin, that's what says, Kru me'itchem truma. You have to take from yourself truma. No one can take it from you. You have to take it, but you have to take it from yourself. It's not going to be easy. It's not something that happens naturally. A person has to work. He has to fight with himself. There has to be a taking from yourself to do the right thing. But that's what the Torah commands us. A person's supposed to work on himself. A person's not supposed to give up. He's not supposed to think it's going to be easy. But a person's supposed to try and push and to take a little bit from himself to give over for what's right and so he can grow. The parasha says in Parakel Amidhei Pasachaf, it says, V'klai saw after Moshe Rabbeinu gathered them in, he told them all the halakas of Shabbos and the Mishkan. It says, V'yetzu milifnei Moshe. They went out from in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. And the Aruch Chaim Kadosh asks, why does it have to say that they left from in front of Moshe Rabbeinu? We understand, you know, eventually at some point this thing was over and they left. Why does Aruch have to speak out specifically that they left from in front of Moshe Rabbeinu? And the author of Kelam explains, he says that we have a Gemara. The Gemara tells us that the Chassidim HaRishayim, the early Chassidim, the pious ones, they would not just daven for an hour. First of all, they would daven for an hour. That's something we can all strive for. But besides that, they would wait an hour before davening and an hour after davening. Now, the hour before davening is understandable. It took them time to focus, to empty their mind of all the things that they have to take care of, and to kind of get themselves into the zone so they can daven to Hashem. But what's the hour after davening about? And he explains that because when a person reaches a certain height, a person can reach a certain level of inspiration. So, it's a beautiful thing, but a person has to be able to take that inspiration and incorporate it back into his regular day. The Chassidim HaRishayim were reaching amazing heights during their tefillah, but now they have to take it and apply it and bring it back, and it has to change them so that when they go back now and they start their day, they look a little different. And that's what it means. The Torah is telling us about Yetzu Lifnei Moshe, they left from in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. It means they weren't the same as when they went in. They didn't just go, they hear something and leave. It changed them. And someone who's watching them could see that these are the people who left from in front of Moshe Rabbeinu. They were people who were there in front of Moshe Rabbeinu and now they're different. They look like people who left Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's something we have to always think about whenever we get inspired about something. How are we going to look different? How could someone see us walking out of that place and realize that we just left an inspirational share? We just left a davening that changed us a little bit. And that's something we have to figure out how to make practical every time we leave an inspirational place. So when I end off, this week's parasha is also parasha Shkolim. One idea on the Machzeh Shekel, I heard from my father in the name of the Alshech, that the question everyone asks is why specifically is a shekel a half shekel? And Al-Shach explains, he says that we know that each person, each neshama, is really a palga de gufa, as Maral calls it. Each person is really a half, and their partner in life, their basher, is their other half. And together they make one neshama. So a man and a woman together make one neshama. In the Chet HaEgel, says the Al-Shach, we know that the ladies didn't sin. So what happened was, is that only half the neshama, the male half of the neshama, was the one that sinned. So when the kapara came, when they had to be mechaper for the chet ha'egel, only the men had to give their half shekel, whereas the women were absolved from giving their half shekel because they did not sin in the chet ha'egel, and that's why it was only a half and not a full shekel. Everybody should have a wonderful Shabbos.